Chapter 8. Mr. Stiggins and SO1. Contrary to popular belief, Neanderthals are not stupid. Poor reading and writing skills are due to fundamental differences in visual acuity. In humans, it is called dyslexia. Facial acuity in Neanderthals, however, is highly developed. The same silence might have 30 or more different meanings depending on how you looked. Neanderthal English has a richness and meaning that is lost on the relatively facially blind human. Because of this highly developed facial grammar, Neanderthals instinctively know when someone is lying, hence their total disinterest in plays, films, or politicians. They like stories read out loud and speak of the weather a great deal, another area in which they are expert. They never throw anything away and love tools, especially power tools. Of the three cable channels allocated to Neanderthals, two of them show nothing but woodworking programs. Gerard von Squid, Neanderthals, back after a short absence.
"Thursday next?"
inquired a tall man with a gravelly voice as soon as I stepped into the Spec Ops building. "Yes?" He flashed a badge.
"Agent Walken, SO5. This is my associate, James Deadman."
Deadman tipped his hat politely and I shook their hands.
"Can we talk somewhere privately?" asked Walken.
I took them down the corridor and we found an empty interview room. "I'm sorry about Fodder and Cannon," I told them as soon as we had sat down.
"They were careless," intoned Deadman gravely. "Contact adhesive should always be used in a well-ventilated room. It says so on the tin." "We were wondering," asked Walken in a slightly embarrassed manner, "whether you could fill us in on what they were up to. They both died before submitting a report."
"What happened to their case notes?" Deadman and Walken exchanged looks.
"They were eaten by rabbits."
"How could that happen?"
"Classified," announced Deadman. "We analyzed the remains, but everything was pretty well digested, except these."
He placed three small scraps of tattered and stained paper wrapped in cellophane on the desk. I leaned closer. I could just read out part of my name on the first one. The second was a fragment of a credit card statement, and the third had a single name on it that gave me a shiver. "Hades."
"Hades?"
I queried. "Do you think he's still alive?"
"You killed him next. What do you think?"
I had seen him die up there on the roof at Thornfield and even found his charred remains when we searched the blackened ruins. But Hades had died before, or so he had made us believe.
"As sure as I can be. What does the credit card statement mean?" "Again," replied Walken, "we're not sure. The card was stolen. Most of these purchases are of women's clothes, shoes, hats, bags and so forth. We've got Dorothy Perkins and Camp Hopson under 24-hour observation. Does any of this ring any bells?"
I shook my head.
"Then tell us about your meeting with Fodder."
I told them as much as I could about our short meeting while they made copious notes.
"So they wanted to know if anything odd had happened to you recently?" asked Walken. "Had it?"
I told them about the sky rail and the Hispano-Suizer and they made even more notes. Finally, after asking me several times whether there was anything more I could add, they got up and Walken handed me his card.
"If you discover anything at all."
"No problem," I replied.
"I hope you catch them."
They grunted in reply and left. I sighed, got up and walked back into the lobby to await Flanker and SO1. I watched the busy station around me and then suddenly felt very hot as the room started to swim. The sides of my vision started to fade and if I hadn't put my head between my knees I would have passed out there and then. The buzz from the room became a dull rumble as I closed my eyes, temples thumping. I stayed there for several moments until the nausea lessened. I opened my eyes and stared at the flecks of mica in the concrete floor.
"Lost something next?" came Flanker's familiar voice.
I very gently raised my head. He was reading some notes and spoke without looking at me.
"I'm running late. Someone's misappropriated an entire cheese seizure. 15 minutes, interview room 3. Be there."
He strode off without waiting for a reply, and I stared at the floor again. Somehow, Flanker and Specop seemed insignificant given that this time next year I could be a mother. Landon had enough money for us both and it wasn't as though I needed to actually re-sign. I could go on the Specop's reservist list and do the odd job when necessary. I was just starting to ponder on whether I was really cut out for motherhood when I felt a hand on my shoulder and someone pushed a glass of water into my line of vision. I gratefully took the glass and drank half of it before looking up at my rescuer.
It was a Neanderthal, dressed in a neat double-breasted suit, with an SO13 badge clipped to its top pocket.
"Hello, Mr. Stiggins," I said, recognizing him.
"Hello, Ms. Next. The nausea will pass."
There was a shudder, and the world whirled backwards in time a couple of seconds so suddenly it made me jump. Stiggins spoke again, but this time made less sense.
"Helto are Miss Next. The Noplia will know us."
"What the hell?"
I muttered as the lobby snapped backwards again and the mauve-painted walls switched to green. I looked at Stiggins, who said,
"Hato is our Miss Next. Buinoplia will know you."
The people in the lobby were now wearing hats. Stiggins jumped back again and said,
"Thato is our aim, Miss Next. Bui how plea, know you?"
My feet felt strange as the world rippled again and I looked down and saw that I was wearing trainers instead of boots. I was clear now that time was flexing slightly and I expected my father to appear, but he didn't. Stiggins flicked back to the beginning of his sentence yet again and said, this time in a voice I could make out clearly,
"That is our name, Miss Next, but how know you?"
Did you feel anything odd just then?
No. Drink the water. You are very pale.
I had another sip, leaned back and took a deep breath. This wall used to be mauve, I mused as Stiggins looked at me.
How you know our name, Miss Next?
You turned up at my wedding party, I told him. You said you had a job for me. He stared at me for almost half a minute through his deep-set eyes. His large nose sniffed the air occasionally. Neanderthals thought a great deal about what they said before they said it, if they said anything at all.
"You speak the truth,"
he said at last. It was almost impossible to lie to a Neanderthal, and I wasn't going to try.
"We are to represent you on this case, Miss Next."
I sighed. Flanker was taking no chances. I had nothing against Neanderthals, but they wouldn't have been my first choice to defend me, particularly against an attack on one of their own.
"If you have a problem, you should tell us,"
said Stiggins, eyeing me carefully. "I have no problem with you representing me."
"Your face does not match your words. You think we have been placed here to hurt your case. It is our belief, too. But as to whether it will hurt your case, we shall see. Are you well enough to walk?"
I said I was, and we went and sat down in the interview room. Stiggins opened his case and drew out a buff file. It was a large print version made out in underlined capitals. He brought out a wooden ruler and placed it across the page to help him read.
"Why you hit Kalu, the Skyrail operator?"
I thought he had a gun.
"Why would you think that?"
I stared into Mr. Stiggins' unblinking brown eyes. If I lied, he would know. If I told him the truth, he might feel it his duty to tell SO1 that I had been involved in my father's work. With the world due to end and the trust in my father implicit, it was a sticky moment, to say the least.
"They will ask you, Miss Next. Your evasion will not be appreciated."
I'll have to take that chance. Stiggins tilted his head to one side and regarded me for a moment.
"They know about your father, Miss Next. We advise you to be careful."
I didn't say anything, but to Stiggins I probably spoke volumes. Half the Thal language is about body movements. It's possible to conjugate verbs with facial muscles. Dancing is conversation. We didn't have a chance to say anything else as the door opened and Flanker and two other agents trooped in.
"You know my name," he told me. "These are Agents King and Nosmo."
The two officers stared at me unnervingly.
"This is a preliminary interview," announced Flanker, who now fixed me with a steely gaze. "There will be time enough for a full inquiry, if we so decide. Anything you say and do can affect the outcome of the hearing. It's really up to you next."
He wasn't kidding. SO1 were not within the law. They made the law. If they really meant business, I wouldn't be here at all. I'd be spirited away to Spec Ops Grand Central, wherever the hell that was. It was at times like this that I suddenly realized quite why my father had rebelled against Spec Ops in the first place. Flanker placed two tapes into the recorder and indented it with the date, time, and all of our names. Once done, he asked in a voice made more menacing by its softness, You know why you are here.
For hitting a skyrail operator?
Striking a Neanderthal is hardly a crime worthy of SO1's valuable time, Miss Next. In fact, technically speaking, it's not a crime at all.
What then?
When did you last see your father?
The other Spec Ops agents leaned forward imperceptibly to hear my answer. I wasn't going to make it easy for them.
I don't have a father, Flanker. You know that. He was eradicated by your buddies in the Chronoguard 17 years ago.
Don't play me for a fool, Next, warned Flanker. This is not something I care to joke about.
Despite Colonel Next's non-actualization, he continues to be a thorn in our side. Again, when did you last see your father?
At my wedding.
Flanker frowned and looked at his notes.
You married? When?
I told him, and he squiggled a note in the margin.
And what did he say when he turned up at your wedding?
Congratulations. He stared at me for a few moments, then changed tack. This incident with the Skyrail operator, he began. You were convinced that he had a soap gun hidden about his person. According to a witness, you thumped him on the chin, handcuffed and searched him. They said you seemed very surprised when you didn't find anything.
I shrugged and remained silent.
We don't give a sod about the Thal Next. Your father's deputizing you is something we could overlook. Replacing you out of time is something we most definitely will not. Is this what happened?
Is that the charge? Is that why I'm here?
Answer the question.
No, sir.
You're lying. He brought you back early, but your father's control of the time stream is not that good. Mr. Kalew decided not to threaten the Skyrail that morning. You were sideslipped Next, joggled slightly in the time stream. Things happened the same way, but not exactly in the same order. Not a big one either. Barely a Class 9. Sideslips are an occupational hazard in Chronoguard work.
That's preposterous, I scoffed.
Stiggins would know I was lying, but perhaps I could fool Flanker.
I don't think you understand, Miss Next. This is more important than just you or your father. 2 days ago we lost all communications beyond the 12th of December. We know there is industrial action, but even the freelancers we've sent upstream haven't reported back. We think it's the big one. If your father was willing to risk using you, we reckon he thinks so too. Despite our animosity for your father, he knows his business. If he didn't, we'd have had him years from now. What's going on?
I just thought he had a gun, I repeated.
Flanker stared at me silently for a few moments.
Let's start again, Miss Next. You search a Neanderthal for a fake gun he carries the following day. You apologize to him using his name, and the arresting officer at the Skyrail station tells me she saw you resetting your watch. A bit out of time, were you?
What do you mean for a fake gun he carries the following day?
Flanker answered without the merest trace of emotion. Kalew was shot dead this morning. I think you should talk and talk fast. I've had enough to loop you for 20 years. Fancy that?
I glared back at him, at a loss to know what to do or say.
Looping was a slang term for closed-loop temporal field containment. They popped the criminal in an 8-minute repetitive time loop for 5, 10, 20 years. Usually it was a laundromat, doctor's waiting room or bus stop, and your presence often caused time to slow down for others near the loop. Your body aged but never needed sustenance. It was cruel and unnatural, yet cheap, and required no bars, guards, or food. I opened my mouth and shut it again, gaping like a fish. Or you can tell us about your father and walk out a free woman.
I felt a prickly sweat break out on my forehead.
I stared at Flanker and he stared at me until, mercifully, Stiggins came to my rescue. Miss Next was working for us at SO13 that morning, Commander, he said in a low monotone. Kalew had been implicated in Neanderthal sedition. It was a secret operation. Thank you, Miss Next, but we will have to tell SO1 the truth.
Flanker shot an angry glance at the Neanderthal, who stared back at him impassively.
Why the hell didn't you tell me this, Stiggins? You never asked.
All Flanker had on me now was a slow watch. He lowered his voice to a growl.
I'll see you looped up behind the crunch if your father is up to no good and you didn't tell us.
He paused for a moment,
and jabbed a finger in the direction of Stiggins. If you've been bearing false witness, I'll have you too. You're running the Thal end of SO-13 for one reason, and one reason only. Window dressing. How you managed to become the dominant species we will never know, Stiggins said at last, so full of hate, anger, and vanity. It's our evolutionary edge, Stiggins. Change and adapt to a hostile environment. We did, you didn't, QED. Darwin won't mask your sins, Flanker, replied Stiggins. You made our environment hostile. You will fall too, but you won't fall because of a more dominant life form. You will fall over yourselves. Garbage, Stiggins. You lot had your chance and you blew it. We have right to health, freedom, and pursuit of happiness too.
Legally speaking, you don't, replied Flanker evenly. Those rights belong only to humans. If you want equality, speak to Goliath. They sequenced you. They own you. If you get lucky, perhaps you can be at risk. Beg, and we might make you endangered.
Flanker shut my file with a snap, grabbed his hat, removed both interview tapes, and was gone without another word. As soon as the door closed, I breathed a sigh of relief. My heart was going like a trip hammer, but I still had my liberty. I'm sorry about Mr. Kalew. Stiggins shrugged.
He was not happy, Miss Next. He did not ask to come back.
You lied for me, I added in a disbelieving tone. I thought Neanderthals couldn't lie. He stared at me for a moment or two.
It's not that we can't, he said at last. We just have no reason to.
We helped because you are a good person. You have sapien aggression, but you have compassion too. If you need help again, we will be there.
Stiggins's normally placid and unmoving face curled up into a grimace that showed two rows of widely gapped teeth. I was fearful for a moment until I realized that what I was witnessing was a Neanderthal smile.
Miss Next?
Yes?
Our friends call us Stig.
Mine call me Thursday. He put out a large hand and I shook it gratefully.
You're a good man, Stig.
Yes, he replied slowly. We were sequenced that way.
He gathered up his notes and left the room. I left the Spec Ops building 10 minutes later and looked for Landon in the cafe opposite. He wasn't there, so I ordered a coffee and waited 20 minutes. He didn't turn up, so I left a message with the cafe owner and drove home, musing that with death by coincidence, the world ending in a fortnight, charges in a court for I didn't know what, and a lost play by Shakespeare, things couldn't get much stranger. But I was wrong. I was very wrong.